The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. Welcome to the latest episode of Wrestling with Jonas, episode 204, part of the Jonas Podcasting Network. I've got Joel Redman with me today. Joel, brilliant to have you on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm not bad, John. That's a hell of a number, 204, so congratulations.
No, thank you. Yeah, it's been a hell of a grind the last nearly 3 years. We're coming up to our three-year anniversary. But pumping out quality interviews and got a quality guest with me today. But Joel, like I say, we're going to dig deep into your career. Of course, we're going to talk about All-Star Wrestling, NXT, All Japan, Rev Pro and everything in between. But like I say, recently, certainly since fans have been back in the arenas, in the wrestling shows, Joel, you've been very, very busy tagging with Charlie Sterling at Rev Pro. You've even had a match with Doug with Rev Pro recently. And I think your debut with OTT as well, not too long ago. A busy couple of months for you. Tell us about what you've been up to recently.
Yeah, really straight back into it again. It's been no rest for me, really. It's just the doors have opened and I've been back on the road, so it's really good. OTT was phenomenal, absolutely amazing company. What Charlie told me all these years was correct. I should have believed him. Rev Pro's great. I always like tagging with Charlie, and Doug's the best, one of the best I've ever produced. So to get in there with Doug yourself is always an honor. Really good. And then lots of camps as well. I've been doing a lot of holiday camps. That's keeping me pretty sharp, keeping it regular. So it's been good.
I was surprised to find during my research that was that your debut show at OTT over in Belfast? I think it was just a month ago.
That's the debut show, yeah. And it was good because I always feel nervous for those kind of companies. I don't host a lot online. I don't wrestle for a lot of internet companies. So I feel a little bit nervous that people aren't going to know who I am or not going to care. And the reaction was quiet when I came out. But by the end, it was a great reaction. And I think I did a good job. And I had a good dancing partner in Amari. So it was good fun.
Indeed, yeah. And I, for one, would love to kind of see you back there. I'm sure you made a few new fans over in Belfast for OTT. Hell of a company. But like I said, I was surprised that was your first appearance for the company. Many more to come, I'm sure. But we had Charlie Sterling, your regular tag team partner in Rev Pro, had him on the show a couple of months ago. Like I say, you've done some awesome work together with Rev Pro. I know that you've been tagging with Charlie since about 2017, haven't you? Like I say, obviously, we've had the layoff due to the pandemic, of course. What was it like kind of teaming back up with Charlie in 2021 after probably a couple of years of not tagging with him, not teaming with him? Was it almost like a day hadn't passed? But it must have been great to be back in the ring with Charlie.
It's always good to be in there with Charlie. I mean, he can be a nightmare at times, like we all can. But, it's always good fun to be a tag team partner with. It feels normal. I didn't train Charlie, T-Bone trained Charlie, but I still had a hand in mentoring him when he started for Brian. So I mean, a lot of the ways he thinks are similar to mine, so quite easy to wrestle with each other. You kind of have the same mindset, how you want things to be and how you want things to look. So it does work quite well. He's probably the best wrestler in the country right now, so to be in a tag team with him is it's always going to be good for me. He's a great wrestler, so it helps sort of give me a little bit of a rub.
And that's a hell of a compliment to say he's one of the best wrestler in the UK right now. And like I say, this year has been a great year for him. He's headlining so many shows, of course, being in high profile tag team matches with yourself. I'd say before he's been renowned maybe as a tag team wrestler. But this is kind of a bit of a breakout year for Charlie as a singles wrestler. We spoke a bit off air, but you kind of think he's got a very bright future, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, wrestling's subjective. So me thinking that he's the best in the country is just my opinion. There's no way of saying someone's the best because wrestling is subjective. It depends on the person who's watching his performance. like, you can't say who the best actor in Hollywood is. It's not possible.
Yeah.
It depends on the person watching it. So the way I watch Charlie wrestle is obviously how I like wrestling to be, because I've probably watched that style onto him over the years. So the way he thinks about wrestling and the way he tells stories in the ring, I always really like. So I'm a bit biased that way, I guess. Yeah, I should think it's a breakout year, but he should have had a breakout year 6 years ago. He's had the chance now. People have sort of left the industry and the doors have opened for him. So I think now is the chance for him to shine. And there's no reason why. I can see him on WWE Monday Night Raw. You know, there's no reason why he shouldn't be there. Something like All Elite Wrestling would be great there too. So let's hope. Let's wait and see what happens, really.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Your audio is dropping out a little bit, Joel. I don't know if you want to adjust the earphones, but...
Does that sound better?
Yes, definitely. Yes, 100% clearer. Tell us a bit about your kind of wrestling fandom and what kind of got you into wrestling as a youngster. I'm assuming you were a fan growing up, or how did you kind of first come across pro wrestling then, Joel?
So my parents are from a farm in Devon, but it's sort of right in the middle of Devon. There's just nothing around. So the house we grew up in didn't have a TV when I was a kid, so I didn't watch any kind of wrestling as a child, you know, but I just played rugby and did a lot of judo when I was a kid. And then a friend of mine from across the field called Chris Andrews, who was a wrestler for a long time as well, he was sort of his brother, watched it on TV. And I'd go over there and watch it on Sky Sports. And then one day they dragged me to the Corn Exchange in Exeter and I watched a live show, which was the Wrestling Alliance. I think I was probably 13, maybe. And I saw James Mason wrestle live. And I just remember watching James, and that style really appealed to me. And I think of the judo background, it sort of fitted me. And that was my start in wrestling. But I was never a big fan. You know, I fully started watching wrestling in the year 2000. So, you know, I haven't been like a long-term fan. I wasn't a little kid watching it, really.
So yeah,
that's probably why my favorite wrestlers are the Benoits and the Angles and these sort of technical wrestlers, because I wasn't a kid when I watched it, I'm a teenager, so I was obviously going to be drawn to those intense sort of aggressive styles rather than the Undertaker or the Rock or Stone Cold, because I was a bit too old for it. But
yeah, and what about the commencement of your training? I mean, was there many wrestling schools? How was you kind of introduced to your first training school, and kind of how did that kind of early part in your career kind of start then, Joel?
Well, it started on some hay bales with a tarpaulin over them and some string for ropes in Andrews' barn. That's how it started in the Devon Junior Wrestling Alliance. I think I was Jules the Bone Breaker Redman for some reason. I think I was a big Steve Blackman fan, so I called myself Redman. So that's probably how it started. I mean, then there was going to be a wrestling school in Exeter. I was about 15 at the time. And then the guy who was going to run it pulled out last second. So I contacted the company and said, I'll sort of manage it. Even though I was a kid, you know, I sort of managed the school. And we'd bring down Andy Simmons and Phil Powers, Sammy Ray, and people would come down and train us. We just sort of pay their fuel with the wage, hire out a little room. So that was how we started. And then I met the UK kid from there and started traveling to Portsmouth every week and then training with a UK kid. Who's a phenomenal trainer. You know, he trained Jay White and stuff. So he's a very, very good trainer.
Yeah.
That was my start.
Yeah. And I mean, how long was it before you had your first match? Because if I'm not mistaken, I think you started as a referee in some early matches, and you were kind of probably gaining quite a bit of experience just from refereeing some matches. Tell us about that.
I started doing holiday camps. I didn't think I was 15. I think I was probably 16. And I started sort of working on the camps, but as a referee, you know, just sort of learning the job. And you might get in the ring there with the boys before the show, and they might show you a few things. So that's how I started. My first pro match, I think I was probably 17. I think it was in Topsham near Exeter, against a guy called Sammy Ray, who had a mask on, Professor Aikida. And it was a dreadful match. Luckily, there's no video footage. I think my mum might have filmed it from the crowd, but it's been deleted. It definitely wasn't a good match. I think I had a skin tight red top on and some kick pads, but yeah, so you've got to start somewhere.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, and usually your first gear is kind of the cringiest, but no, that's really, really cool.
I think my second match on the show was in Crediston Town Hall, which is the nearest town to where my parents are farmers. I wrestled a guy called Spiro or Spyro or something. I'm not sure Michael's trainees from America.
Pretty cool.
And he did a pod driver finish. And the idea is that I've injured myself and I can't be in the six-man main event. And he did me the pile driver. And I'm not in any way saying I'm good at selling. No, I'm not trying to put myself over. But obviously, I did a decent job that day because my mum started to ring the ambulance. We had to sort of quickly tell her that it wasn't quite as she thought it was. You know, I was actually okay. She was sort of trying to break into the changing room to make sure I was all right.
And tell us a bit more about starting with All Stars, because I think it was probably a couple of years before you started wrestling for All Star Wrestling, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a company that you're closely associated with and have been wrestled for very frequently, both before you went to the States and definitely since you returned. But to tell us about your relationship with All Star, because it's been a lengthy one, isn't it? It's been there for the majority of your career.
It's probably been there the whole career, but I mean, back in the day, I'd be lucky to get a Minehead Butlins gig, and you know, I was an out of shape kid. I wasn't in particularly good shape, and I wasn't a natural wrestler at all. It took me a long time to get any good, if I am any good now, but you know, I didn't pick it up quickly. So I mean, I started for Brian at a very young age, but I just did shows here and there, just sort of one-off little gigs. But I always aspired to be with All Star. I mean, when I started wrestling, like I've said before on podcast, it was British wrestling, and then it was All Star Wrestling. They were a different league. It was the sort of land of the giants. And just to do little shows there, just gave you a taste of what it was going to be like, you know, big crowds, huge, big wrestlers. So when I came back from the States, Brian called me and said, you know, I'd be like, have you on full time? We sort of negotiated a price and stuff. And then from then on, seven years ago, I've been full time for Brian ever since then. And it's my home. You know, All Star is my home. It's my favorite place to wrestle. It's a day off. It's not a job. I go there. Yeah, it's my friends. It's the style I love. I love, you know, wrestling in front of families. It's my favorite thing because it's just, especially things like Butlins or something where they're not wrestling fans. You get that real emotion from people. Where they're not looking for, you know, not just a bad way. We're not looking for dangerous moves or complicated routines. They're just looking to be entertained. And I quite enjoy that style, just trying to entertain people and tell good basic stories through my wrestling, which I think you can do at All Star.
Yeah,
it is. To me, it was always the best, and it's you know, it was always the best to me when I was a kid. And yeah, I mean, it was the best place to wrestle. So to be full time there was a big deal, and I won their British heavyweight title quite a while ago now, but I had it for a couple of years. It was a long little title reign, and that belt meant more to me than any other belt. You know, it meant more than the NXT tag belts or anything. That was the one thing I thought I'd win that, and to have that was a big deal for me.
Yeah. And what is it about kind of holiday camp wrestling that kind of fascinates you so much and you're so much in love with? Because I've had so many guests on this podcast this year alone, the likes of Tyson Taylor and T-Bone, Charlie Sterling, even Vic from The Ascension, who did holiday camps when he came over here in the early 2000s, Dino, of course, and that they've all kind of championed All-Star and championed the holiday camp circuit because of the grind, the repetitions, the amount of shows that you do per week, per day sometimes, multiple shows, and how it helps you kind of learn your craft to a very, very high level, very, very quickly as well. And it's probably a really good proving ground for any young up-and-coming wrestler. But what's your take on kind of, you know, the learnings that you can gain from wrestling for a company like All Star and certainly the holiday camps?
I think the only way to improve in this business is to wrestle, just to be on shows. You can only learn so much in a training school, because this job's about getting emotion from a crowd. So you need to be in front of an audience in order to get that emotion. And that's what you need to learn how to do. At holiday camps, you get big crowds. And like I say, they're not wrestling fans. So if I can make someone who's walking through the skyline at Butlins, who doesn't even like wrestling, if I can make them stop and watch my match and get into it, that's a good skill. And that's a skill that can make you a lot of money. That means that you can entertain an average person. So they're a really valuable learning tool, obviously, you know, for young wrestlers. And the boys that I teach, I get them onto the camps now because it's the best place to learn. And for me, there's just no pressure. Things like Rev Pro or the, you know, those independent companies, there's a lot of pressure, because there is a lot of pressure to do well, because you play less shows, and you feel that pressure on you when you go out there to wrestle, which isn't a bad thing. You know, it's a good thing, and sometimes that helps people step up to the next level. But at the same time, wrestling is more enjoyable when it's fun. And when you're having fun and you're confident, it comes across in what you do in the ring. And holiday camps can just be fun. You know, it is good fun for us. And yeah, that's the best thing about it, really.
Yeah, and especially when you're out there with the likes of with Dino and Tyson Taylor and Marquis Seeley on a regular basis, that must be a blast. And like I say, having not seen them for quite a while during the pandemic, it must have been great to have kind of got the gang back together, so to speak, at an all-star show.
Yeah, it's a good bond. You know, if you do 6 weeks on the camps, it's a long time away living with people. So you get quite a good bond with people. So it is, they're good friends. You know, wrestling, you have a lot of colleagues and you have a small group of friends, and most of my small group of friends work for All Star just because that's the company I make me wrestle for. So it's great to see them. You know, it's been a hard time with the COVID for everybody, you know, and for some far worse than me. But to be able to see your mates again is a really good thing.
Absolutely. I want to talk about 2008, because in my research, it seemed like that was kind of like a bit of a fundamental year in your career. I mean, just for example, kind of within a month or two, you won the IPW tag title with Haskins, and then you faced in a four-way Davey Richards, Zack Sabre Jr. and Kenny Omega in a four-way match in Wolverhampton. And then you fought Claudio, Cesaro, of course, in Oxford. And then a little while later, you made your WXW debut in your first tour of Germany. So 2008, certainly, I mean, that encapsulated a bit of a breakout year for you in terms of really getting your name out there, facing some fantastic talent, albeit some of them on their way up themselves. Did you see kind of that time period as a bit of a fundamental, bit of an important breakout year in your career?
Yeah, I think it is. I think those matches, the me and Haskins against Zach and Marty, good matches. You know, I think it helped us all. And it's quite cool to think of those matches and then think of what the four of us did in our careers. You know, it was it's just quite nice to see that we all went on to do some good stuff in our careers. That's pretty cool. In terms of that year, the best thing of that year, and I think I've got the date right, I could be wrong, it could be 2009, but I'm pretty sure Noah's show in Coventry Skydome was 2008. So wrestling for Noah that year and sort of being the first man at the curtain for that show was really good. And my parents were never against wrestling. You know, they're phenomenal parents, fantastic. But my dad played rugby, and I think he would like me to play rugby a bit more than I did. So they never, I'm not saying they didn't get behind it, they just didn't understand wrestling. And when you take them to Creighton Town Hall and there's 60 people, still don't really get why you want to do it. So for the Sky Dome in Coventry, there was, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 people. So I got them tickets, sit in the bleachers there and watch. And it was when they really accepted that, you know, it was something that I could do and that, you know, I had a talent for, I guess, and they sort of supported me more from then, really. And that to me was a good moment. 2008 was just being able to get acceptance from them. That was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, around then you started teaming with Haskins, and like I say, you went on to have a very successful run with him as the Thrillers. You two came into the business at around the same time. Like I say, started teaming with one another in RevPro and one or two other companies. But do you feel that the two of you teaming together, you was obviously able to get the rub off of one another and learn from one another as you were finding your feet in the business? That was, I'd say, quite a good learning experience for you both at the time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I say, I train with the UK Kid, and UK Kid is an incredible trainer, absolutely amazing trainer. But there was this guy, Chris Andrews, who was my mate, and Chris, like a Greek god, you know, had a phenomenal physique. I was a sort of fat teenager. And obviously Chris got a lot of the shows and I didn't really. I sort of sat there and watched, which is probably how it should have been. He's a better wrestler. But eventually one day UK, I think Mark Sloan wanted someone for the FWA Academy, and UK Kid just sort of threw me to do the FWA Academy. Again, I wasn't a good wrestler, but I worked hard at the ring and I showed I wanted to learn. And I guess Mark Sloan sort of saw that in me. And then when he closed the academy, he picked 8 people to train on a full-time basis. And me and Haskins were two of those people. So we just got this dingy little flat in Southsea and Portsmouth together. Yeah, teenage boys sort of moved in there. And I think we slept on the floor for the first few weeks because we couldn't afford our beds and stuff. And sort of did it the hard way a little bit. And that was a good experience. But when you've gone through that with someone, you've got a bond with them. You know, it is a close bond. sort of love-hate relationship, definitely. You know, we're good mates, we can beat each other's throat as well at times, but it was a good dynamic because we were training together. When you tag together with someone that you're training with, a bit like with Charlie, it's just that I know what he's thinking a little bit. I know the style that he does and that kind of stuff. So it was really good.
Yeah, yeah. And from then over the next 3 or 4 years, you know, you wrestled solidly up and down the country for a ton of promotions before getting signed to WWE. But obviously the work that you were putting in around that time was getting you noticed. But was there a time during that period when you noticed a difference in your own performance and you could feel yourself getting better to the point where you were starting to, people were starting to talk about yourself and taking that next stage in your career?
I couldn't notice that myself because my mindset is always someone working harder. There's a wrestler at the same time called Sam Slam, and Sam Slam was a great wrestler, and he was sort of the next big heavyweight. And so when I was wrestling, I was training in the gym, it was my mindset was that Sam Slam's doing more than me. He's doing 2 more reps, so I'm going to do 4 more reps. It was just that mindset of I have to always compete with somebody else. I'm a competitive person, so that's what drives me along anyway. Yeah. So not really in terms of noticing myself improve. I mean, the biggest thing for me that helped me learn was Premier Promotions on the South Coast. Again, teenage lad there. And John Fremantle, the promoter, I think he just saw something in me. And my first set of matches there, I'll try and remember them in order. I think the first one was like Steve Gray and Mal Sanders in a tag. Next, it was Brookside. Next, it was Danny Boy Collins. Wow. Next was Johnny Kidd. Then it was Doug. You know, I mean, it was just ridiculous. And completely out of my depth and just getting schooled by these guys in the ring. But whenever that happens to you, you kind of learn a little bit. You know, it's the old saying, you've got to wrestle people better than you to improve, and it definitely is true. When you're in there with someone who's so much better than you, okay, you look a bit foolish at times because you can't really keep up, but little bits rub off on you. So I think I'd have to thank sort of obviously Mark Sloan for my training and John Fremantle for the opportunities to help me improve.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And around that time, you know, 2010, 2011, going into 2012, was WWE the goal for yourself at the time?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I didn't really watch a lot of other stuff at the time. I don't know if I'm not that old. I guess things probably were available to be able to be watched. But everyone had that goal of, you know, I mean, like I said, I grew up watching it. End of the sort of 99s, 2000 would be the first year I watched wrestling. So it's like a golden era of WWE. So, I mean, you're going to watch it thinking that's where you want to be, but you never think you're ever going to get there. You know, it's kind of like a little dream you have, but it's not realistic. You just think, you know, of every wrestler that wrestles will say, they should say they want to wrestle there because you should. Who doesn't want to be at WrestleMania? You know, you'd be stupid to say no. But you don't actually think it's ever going to happen. It's an unrealistic dream.
Yeah, yeah. How did you first get on WWE's radar then? Did you have a tryout when they were over here in the UK? How did it start for you?
So when I left Portsmouth, I moved back to Devon and I started a thing called the Devon Wrestling Association where I just sort of trained a lot of lads down there. I didn't really want to train people. I was a bit too young, so we just called it an association. We'd all just get together and have a ring up and we'd roll around. And I'd tell them, God's sake, don't say I'm training you because I shouldn't be teaching people at this age. And then I think it kind of thing called a British Wrestling Council or something with Alex Shane, and got involved with that, like all the schools did at the time. And they had like a training seminar up in Nottingham, and Drew McDonald was there at the time. So I went to the seminar, and Drew said, WWE have heard about you, they want to see you fill in this form, but it's a done deal. You'll be at the tryouts in Manchester. So that was my first sort of contact with them. And then I went to the Manchester tryouts and dropped the ball big time. You know, I had a terrible tryout, wasn't good at all. And they just said, listen, get a bit better shape, come back to the next one in 6 months' time in the O2, and work at you again. That one went to plan, I guess. I was sort of lucky, right place, right time, and got the job.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And when you first got signed, was FCW still the developmental of WWE back then, or had it changed to NXT? I think you kind of, when you first got signed, it was still FCW, am I correct?
It was FCW was where I first went there. So we probably had about 25 people in like a little sweatbox warehouse in Tampa. And then whilst I was there, it transitioned into NXT.
That's right. But,
like I knew Bram from England. So I met him at Brian's shows when I was younger. So when I got signed, I contacted Tom and I said, oh, I'm coming over to the States and we're about to live. And, you know, I moved into the same complex as him and Connor, who was your guest on Show 200.
Indeed.
So we lived in the same little complex. And I remember Tom being a very handsome, good-looking, clean-cut baby face when I knew him in England. And I knocked on his door, and he's got skin like leather and a big dirty beard and chewing tobacco in his mouth. I said, bloody hell, what's happened to you? He said, give it a year, you'll be the same. In a year's time, I had exactly the same. Skin like leather, long hair, chewing tobacco. So let's see what happened. But he was, they were really good to sort of look after me in the early days, those two. They were big stars there at the time, the Ascension. They were getting the big push. So to come in as sort of their mate was a massive help, massive help. Because I do, me and Martin went there that first weekend we were on shows. They put us straight on the live shows. And it was hard to do that British style with people that don't know what it is, really, because they're just American wrestlers. And if they're more experienced, they're just going to say, no, I'm not doing that. And it was good that Connor and Tom would come over to them and say, listen, you do your stuff. Let Joel do this British stuff. That's what he does. That's why he's got a job here. So they were a massive help to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was such an awesome crop of talent there. Like you say, it was the transition period between FCW and NXT. And I mean, you had the likes of an early Seth Rollins, formerly Tyler Black, of course, and he was the FCW 15 champion. I think Dean Ambrose was around at the time. John Moxley, of course. And you mentioned one or two others there. I think was it Richie Steamboat was part of that transition as well. And
he
was there.
Roman Reigns. Of course, with me in developmental, Bray Wyatt. I mean, that's what the crazy thing is now, because at the time they were just the boys, you know. We were all training in a warehouse and none of us were big names. And then you look at TV now and you look at Roman Reigns or someone, you think, God, you know, it's crazy how far he's come.
Yeah.
I mean, when I got released, it was difficult to watch for a while, because you think these guys were with me and I could have done that too. You know, you look at what they're doing now and you think, if things gone right or I played the right game, maybe I'd be there as well. It was tough to watch. I've forgotten about that now. You know, that's all water under the bridge. But for the first year or so, it was kind of playing in your mind a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And when was it discussed that you were going to be teaming with Pac, with Adrian Neville? Because, of course, you went in there as a singles talent. And when did you kind of first have that conversation, or when was that a conversation given to you that you were going to be part of a tag team?
I think the Ascension were the boys to win that thing to start with. It was designed to have the Ascension win, I imagine. Yeah. I don't know for sure. I'm not in the office, but I would have thought that was the case. And then Tom got released from his contract. The Ascension disappeared. And there was a space for a team. And obviously, Pac is one in a million. There isn't anyone like him in the world. And when you've got him under contract, you can get him on TV quick. And I was lucky that I was just the other British guy. He'd have a British baby face. Okay, Oliver Graves, a man. So I was shoved in the team with him. And it just worked, you know, it just kind of clicked. I mean, he's a phenomenal high flyer. I'm a terrible high flyer. So, you know, it's perfect combination of styles. And it just sort of all went well for us. But we never thought we were going to win. It was just a case of we thought we'd be in the first round. And I think with 3MB was the first match. You think, oh, 3MB have just come off TV. They'll beat us for sure. And once the ball got rolling, it didn't stop, and next thing you knew, we had tag belts.
Well, this is it. I mean, 3MB in the first round, and then you had Cassius Ohno and Leo Kruger in the semi, and then the Wyatts, Harper and Rowan in the final. And was it British Ambition, the name of the team between British yourself Ambition. And
we didn't call it that, so don't blame us for that.
That wasn't your creation. But I mean, when were you told that you were going over in the final then? I mean, were you told that night before you went through the curtain, or was it told to you kind of after match one? How soon or how late did you know that you're actually going to win the titles?
Well, I mean, obviously, letting the tricks out of the box, and it was probably about an hour before we went out. I mean, it was, I think when we got there to Full Sail that day, you know, it's not a bad rib. It's a good wrestling rib. It's fun. And I think Joey Mercury said to us, boys, you've done phenomenal to get here. You're in the final. Amazing work. But obviously, you're not winning today. The Wyatt family are going to be winning. You know, so we go back. You're not gutted because you think, well, we've had a good run. You know, we're in the final. It's all good. And then, maybe an hour later, a couple of hours later, they go, oh, this is just a joke, lads, you are winning. Packs over with the red arrow. So, yeah, it was good.
Oh, yeah, phenomenal match. And the look on your face, You could tell that you were kind of overjoyed as you were handed the bouts, and you had Dusty there presenting the bouts to you too. It was a hell of a moment for sure.
It was one of those things where we had to rehearse how we would celebrate before the show, and right. It's impossible. How can you rehearse that? You know, all you do is worry about the match and making sure it's good. And I think Billy Gunn and Road Dogg were the agents, and they were sort of getting a bit hot that we weren't celebrating well enough. Oh, you need to be more exaggerated. You need to celebrate more. This is a big deal. First ever tag champs. And you're like, well, we haven't, you know, the match has still got to happen. There's still a lot of pressure on us. And what we rehearsed is completely nothing like what we did. I think when we won the belts, like rugby tackled into the floor, we roll around on the floor, and some of the people in the office didn't like it very much, but I think it looked real, you know. It was a real celebration. It wasn't a rehearsed, choreographed celebration. It was real feelings, which is what you want on TV, right? That's the best thing that you can do.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. So I mean, I need to ask, I mean, after you lost the titles, you kind of was off the TV screens for 8 or 9 months. Were you injured? Were there reasons why you're off TV for that length of time?
Mm-hmm. So we won the tag belts. I had a phone call saying, you guys are going to go up to the main roster. What tracksuit size are you and stuff? You know,
wow.
It's all going well. You think this is it now. We're out of here. We're going to go up to Raw and stuff. And then I think it was WrestleMania. I was meant to go up and do the access at WrestleMania. About 2 weeks before WrestleMania, I was wrestling Bray Wyatt on a house show, and he just went to give me a body slam. I was going to land behind, and I just landed behind and just blew my ACL out of my knee. I just went down like I'd been shot, and I managed to sort of pretend it was okay and drive my car home. And then the next day when I was training, I just stomped my foot down and a meniscus flipped over in my knee as well. I had an MRI scan, and then they called me and said, you'd be out for 9 months. So all those plans we had for you are scrapped, and you won't be going to WrestleMania. You'll be staying at rehabbing in Tampa. It's difficult thing to deal with. When you're that close, you know, when you can taste sort of the end goal, to have it taken away. But and I was too young. You know, I was in my early 20s when that happened. I wish it was now. If it was now, I could have dealt with it better. But it was what it was. You know, it was one of those things we had to deal with.
But they tried to bring you back, didn't they? You were still, after you recovered, they came back. You did a couple of promos backstage, which were aired. Mm-hmm. So there was plans to bring you back as a singles performer. Is that right?
Yeah, I came back and I sort of beat someone quite quickly on my first match back. That never got aired for some reason. I don't know why. It looked like plans were pretty good to bring me back into the mix pretty fast. And then I was doing some tagging stuff with Marcin, with Danny Birch. And that was quite good. You know, I was hoping that was going to take off as well. But yeah, I don't know what it was. I mean, like I say, FCW is 25 people. So when you get there, you think there's a really good chance I'm going to go up and I'm going to be on the big show. By the time we were in NXT, there was 125 people. And your chance to get out of there is slim. You know, it's very, very difficult. It's a lot more competition. It is what it is. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't wrestle like I used to when I had a big knee brace on. That used to get to me a little bit. And like I said, I was young. You know, I was young and sort of dealing with a lot of stuff after the injury, and it just didn't go well for me. And the writing was on the wall. I'd be released pretty quick, I think.
Yeah. Look, say while you were there, close to 2 years, you know, you had some fantastic opportunities. You were first ever NXT Tag Team Champions with Adrian Neville. Nobody can ever take that away from you. But what were some of your kind of fondest memories of being over there with the boys? Like I say, you obviously made some friends for life over there and had some great moments. But getting all the bad memories out of the way and thinking about it 7 years on, what are some of the fondest memories you look back on now of your NXT years?
I guess within those tag belts, just because it's something you can always keep with you, you know, it's a nice thing to be able to say. Fond memories, you know, I'm not negative towards WWE in any way. I know British guys that have been there and come back that, you know, can be negative about it. I think for any young wrestler, it's the best place to go if you can get there. I had maybe a bad experience. I was unlucky, I guess, with injuries. And it's difficult for me to look back at that time in my life happy, because all I think about is the injury and it all sort of being taken away at that last minute. So I don't have a lot of good memories. It's not a part of my career that I look back on particularly fondly. I look back at it almost as a cock-up, you know, like I should have done more. I feel a bit disappointed in myself that I didn't do better. It's not the highlight of my wrestling career. Well, it should be the highlight because it's the biggest place you can wrestle, so it should be my highlight, but it's not. It's the worst thing I've ever done in my career.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about happier times then. I mean, All Japan, you spent a vast majority of 2019 over in All Japan. Another great opportunity, new culture, new fans, new talent to get in the ring with, and an opportunity to maybe learn a new style and pick up some new tricks. But I think that was a much more positive time in your career, and All Japan is a company that's very close to your heart.
It's incredible. It's difficult to explain how good wrestling in Japan is, and I'm sure if you speak to Danny Jones or Chris Ridgway or Zach or Marty or any boys that have gone out there to Japan and wrestled, they'll say exactly the same thing. It's like a different world out there. The way you're respected, the way you're treated, the way the crowd are, and that's down to Japanese wrestling and their wrestlers, the way they've kept that culture alive. It's just so professional. It's phenomenal. And that's the only good thing I can look back at and say, well, at least I got released. I had the chance to go there. You know, if I'm still under contract, I would never have gone there. So, I mean, that's a benefit, I guess, of being released. But yeah, it's an incredible place to go. It's unbelievable that sometimes I get the chance to go to Japan and get flown out there and put up in hotels. And, you know, you pay money to wrestle and you think this is insane that I can make a living and make good money doing this, you know, and see in Japan, people have to pay a lot of money to go there. Once in a lifetime, you know, I go there 5 times in a year. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And how did that opportunity come about then? Because once again, obviously, you've got a lot of connections in the business, a lot of people that are kind of looking out for you for opportunities like this. But probably, you know, you hadn't been to Japan before, so maybe a bit of an unexpected opportunity for you at the same time.
It's that Noah match from 2000. I think it's 2008. I wrestled Aoki in the opener, did a 20-minute draw. And then I think, 2018, maybe when I contacted me, I had a message in my junk folder on Facebook just from All Japan because Aoki put my name forward because they wanted a heavyweight from Europe. So it's just weird how 10 years later, you know, that match sort of paid off a little bit and got me the deal. I hardly even check the Facebook anyway, but to check the junk folder, I was fortunate I saw the message, and then it all just sort of went planned, and Akiyama was on board to bring me out there, and then we sort of went from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm guessing when things get a little bit more back to normal and there's less travel restrictions, you'll be on the first plane out there. Want to have more All Japan experiences, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, like we said before we came on air, you know, I've got our first baby is due in November the 15th. So I don't know how things are going to change once the family, you know, I don't want to be selfish, you know, I want to be able to be here to support Michelle and the kids. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully she's got her family around in Salisbury. So I'm hoping next year she'll feel confident enough to let me get back out there because I do love going out there. I feel like I was just making a start out there and then COVID hit, you know, it was one of those things.
Yeah, we've all had to deal with.
But it's just that sort of British European style isn't done out there. So when you take that out to Japan, the crowds, you know, and I'm just doing a simple reversal. I'm doing a very poor imitation of a Steve Wright reversal or a Steve Gray reversal. The crowd are sort of eating it up because they don't see it. You know, in England, we see everyone do that and they do it much better than me. So it's not the same reaction. But when I go to Japan, I can get away with getting a good reaction from this stuff. And it's the style that I love. You know, I love that British style. So it's brilliant.
Yeah. And while you're out there, did you embrace the culture? Did you embrace the food and pick up any of the language?
I can order 2 beers. I think Fatatsu Beerlu could decide. 2 beers, please.
That's a start.
I mean, just this business, you want to fit in with the boys, I guess, when you go. When I first went out there, a lot of the boys like to do the show, have a couple of beers, go to the bar, have a couple of beers, sleep, wake up at midday. You kind of get in that routine. And I'm thinking, hang on a second, I'm in these places in Japan that I'll probably never come to again in my life. So I'll just have 2 beers in the bar and then I'll get an early night and I'll get up at 8 in the morning and I'll go and see a temple where I'll walk around this little town in Japan because I'm probably never going to see it again. So I was doing that. And I saw a lot of Japan. I kind of got Joe Doring. I think Joe had been there for 12 or 13 years. And he'd never bothered getting up and doing that. You know, he'd always just gone drinking and woken up at midday. And I was like, listen, Joe, get up at 8 and come for a walk with me. We're going to go and see this castle and we're going to look at these samurai swords. And he did it. And he's, why have I never done this for the last 10 years? And it was like a morning thing that we do. We get up early, get to 7-Eleven, get a black coffee. Yeah, I like to. He's got the old chewing tobacco, so I was doing that too. So we put the go and see a castle, go and go to the sort of museum and stuff. And it was really good. I think it's one of those things you've got to do with wrestling. You know, I get lucky enough to go to a lot of countries, and a lot of boys sometimes don't do that. I think if you're in these countries, you get paid for it. You may never go there again. Just go and see stuff. Go and experience the culture.
Yeah, yeah. And back home over here in the UK, you do a lot of seminars, you do a lot of coaching. I think you DM'd me on Twitter last night saying that you were busy coaching at Rev Pro last night. So how long have you been coaching for? And I mean, it must be a hell of a blast for you to be able to pass on your knowledge and your experience and see the new crop of talent kind of come through and to know that you've had a hand in that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been coaching for Rev Pro for a while now on a Wednesday night, which I really enjoy doing. But I've got my own school in Salisbury on Saturday mornings, which is just on mats. They're just learning mat wrestling. They're not in a ring. Yeah. Running the ropes. They're just learning how to wrestle properly on the floor. It's just one of those things, John, where I'm 34 and it's you know, I'm getting there. I'm getting old. So I've got to think about what I'm going to do when the wrestling ends. And I love to teach people how to wrestle, and it seemed like the perfect fit to do that. And there's a lot of schools in England I've noticed, and I'm not knocking any schools because I'm in no place to knock people's schools, and I don't want to do that. But sometimes there's maybe trainers that haven't had the experience that they need to be a trainer. And not that I'm the best wrestler in the world. I feel like I've at least been to a few places. And if you look at the people that taught me in America, I mean, my first 6 months I was taught by Ricky Steamboat. I mean, don't get better than that, you know. And all I'm telling the boys in Portsmouth or in Salisbury, I'm not saying I'm this great wrestler. I'm just saying this is what Fit Finley told me. This is what Ricky Steamboat told me. This is what Triple H showed me. This is what The Undertaker told me. You know, it's all these things that have been passed on to me. I'm just relaying the message. Yeah. And I think it's a school that if you come to, whether you like me or not, there's that experience that I've had. I've been around a lot of people and I've been lucky enough to have a lot of different influence throughout my career. And I think it's a good school to come to, and you'll get a lot of different knowledge. I just enjoy training. And it's great to see people who have the right mindset and the right attitude and see them progress, see them do well. It'd be a big reward to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as we kind of start to bring this interview to a close, Joel, when you look back over your 16, 17 year career, what are some of the proudest moments of your career? Because like you say, you've wrestled in the States, in Japan, across Europe, all over the UK. You've wrestled the biggest and the best names the UK and the world has to offer. It must be a lot of proud moments there, a lot of proud memories, but any that stand out in particular?
There's two that I remember well. The second to best probably is wrestling Fujiwara for All Japan, the guy who invented the Fujiwara armbar.
Yeah.
Just because the way that the boys were so excited backstage that me and him were going to wrestle, this is going to be an incredible wrestling match. And it wasn't particularly good. I mean, I was just probably very nervous to wrestle him. And I remember Ultima Dragon came up to me before the match and said, you know, it's like he's Fujiwara's young boy, and he's, oh, please, no stiff, please be light with Mr. Fujiwara-san. You know, we're about to wrestle, and Ultimate Dragon's out ringside with the towel, you know, watching. You think, this is the pressure here, you know. And I've got all the wrestling boys standing at the curtain. So that was a good memory, just to wrestle with someone as legendary as him. That was 100%. Good. My favorite moment, I've said it before, is winning the All-Star Heavyweight belt. You know, I never ever thought I'd win that belt. It's my home company and it's my friends, and it's the best. I learned more wrestling for All Star than anywhere else I've ever wrestled. Just to be around James Mason and Smithy and Dean and Mikey Whiplash and Robbie Dynamite and Darren Walsh. You know, the list can go on and on. PNUs, Gangrel, people that are in All Star, and just watching them work. It's an incredible, absolutely phenomenal the way they wrestle. James Mason is the best wrestler I've ever seen. You know, And I've seen a lot of wrestlers, you know, about Roman Reigns, all these wrestlers. And James is the best wrestler I've ever seen in my life. It's unbelievable stuff that he can do. Being around the All-Star boys, it's incredible the for me in terms of a learning experience, just to win their belt and feel that Brian had the trust in me to have his championship belt and have it for a two-year reign was really cool. You know, it was really good.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And obviously, you're busy, the crowds are back. You obviously got a baby on the way, but over the next few weeks, few months, are you kind of, what's your schedule like? Have you got many bookings? Where can any of my listeners or viewers kind of go and see you if they want to see you in the flesh and watch you wrestle?
I'll be in Coventry tomorrow night. I don't know what they call it. Big Jim's house party or something. I don't know.
Right.
Something like that. But it's up in Coventry. The Wrestling Coventry, if you want to look online, it's going to be a hell of a show. There's some incredible talent on that show tomorrow. So I'm really excited to get up there and get in the mix. That's that Saturday. I'm in Reach Wrestling in Holsworthy. Reach is Devon. It's where I'm from. It's my home county. So they always have a sort of special place for me to go down there. I love looking at how their trainees are coming along because it's reminds me of myself. You know, I was a farm kid in Devon. A lot of these boys are Devon guys and girls. So being able to watch them progress is a big deal. That's that. That's this weekend. Next weekend, I've got a holiday camp Saturday and Sunday for All Star. The following weekend, I'm doing Perrenporth. I think it's a 1 o'clock start in Perrenporth, and then I'm driving to Worcester for a 7 o'clock start in Worcester. Wow. So we're doing a big double, big drive. That's going to be a good one. And this, Sunday, I'm in Reading in the Hexagon Theatre, which is also the first town show back after the pandemic. Done a lot of camps, but it's the first big town show, so that'd be quite exciting. So that's this month, and then October is very, very busy. I think All-Star's got something like a 10 show run at the end of October every day. So that'd be good, because I haven't done any big runs since coronavirus. I've done a lot of shows, but it's a different story when you're talking 9 or 10 shows in a row.
Yeah,
very different thing. So that's October, and then I'm going to shut the doors and go quiet a little bit in November and enjoy being a dad and try and not get in the way too much in November, and then maybe come back to it in December. I think James Mason's probably going to hopefully do a few shows around Christmas time. It's really just a lot of us mates getting together in a village hall and putting on some good family entertainment, so that'll be good fun.
That's December time. It's got to be done. It's got to be done.
And then we'll see what next year brings. I mean, yeah, I'd like to get out there to some new companies. That's the plan, really. There's a lot of places I haven't wrestled. I have been in that All-Star bubble for the last 8 years. Not that it's a bad thing, but it's there's a lot of independent companies in England that I've never been to. A lot of wrestlers that I've never wrestled. I'm 34, but I'm physically fit. I've got no injuries. I feel good. I feel I'm probably the best I've ever been. I used to cater whatever people wanted to see and try and do styles that I'm not suited to. I feel like I've got my style now. I know what I do, and I just do that wrestling style. And like I say, OTT was a phenomenal experience. Let's hope I get back out there again next year. But let's see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you're still very, very hungry and like I say, keen to, I don't know, see where the future holds for you. Like I say, many new promotions are opening up all the time. Would love to have you on their card for sure. But Joel, it's been amazing speaking to you for the last 45, 46 minutes. But if anybody wants to reach out to you on social media, say hi, get to learn more about Joel Redman, where can they do that on social media? Or if you have a YouTube or any merch you want to push. But Joel, where can we say hi?
Now, I think you might even know better than me. I think the Twitter is Joel Redman Pro. It used to be NXT Oliver Gray, and I tried to keep that for about 6 years. We had the little blue tick, but eventually I had to let that die. It'd be too long. So it's Joel Redman Pro on Twitter. Feel free to follow me on that. And Instagram is j.redman87.
That's right.
I think. But yeah. You know better than me, but
just search Joel Redman.
I'm not search Joel Redman. Something to come up, and I'm not knocking on Instagram because I'm probably looking at it a lot and stuff, but I don't post very much. I like the idea of wrestlers having a little bit of a mystery away from the audience, but that's that old school drilled into me probably from years on the camps. So I don't post much, and I can't bring myself to do topless pictures in the gym mirror. The gym I go to, it would be frowned upon, I think. So there's not a lot of gym content, and away from wrestling in the gym, there's not a great deal else that I do. So feel free to follow me. When I'm in Japan, I sometimes post stuff from Japan or different countries that I'm in. So that could be quite interesting. But yeah, that's my social media.
That's pretty cool. But Joel, it's been amazing speaking to you for the last 50 minutes. But thank you very much indeed. And hopefully we can do a part two somewhere down the line.
Anytime, John. And all the best. Good job at the podcast. I enjoy them. Keep them coming.
Yep. Thank you very much.